Hey guys, before we get stuck into today's episode, I want to thank the sponsor of the Fitness and Lifestyle podcast, and that is Unify Health Supplements. Unify have the most premium, high-quality, science-backed products on the market in Australia today, and you guys can use the code TFLP to save 10% off your next order at unifyactive.com. Unify has a range of products including whey protein isolate, plant-based protein, a pre-workout, creatine monohydrate, and their best-selling product, the hydration formula. So again, use that code TFLP to save 10% at unifyactive.com.
What's going on, guys? It is Sam McDaniel here from the Brisbane Bullets. I've spent the last 6 years in the NBL, and over the last couple of years, I've really taken a keen interest in personal development and growth, and I'm excited to be having this chat with Danny today. Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast.
Welcome to the Fitness and Lifestyle Podcast. I'm your host, Danny Kennedy, and I'm here to help you become the very best version of yourself. Sam, welcome to the show, brother. It's a pleasure to catch up. Obviously, we had a little chat before we hit record. You and I have had a little bit to do with each other, I guess, when you spent time with Melbourne United. We used to kind of see each other here and there in the gym at MSAC, and we kind of stayed in touch, and we had a really cool chat before the beginning of the most recent NBL season. And I've been really keen to get you on the show for some time now, just from afar watching your growth, in regards to personal development, but also as a player and an athlete, and I guess the maturity as well, which we'll touch on today. But brother, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for having me. Like you said, we've had a little bit to do with each other, but it's super exciting for me to not only be on your show, but to be able to have some cool discussions as well.
For sure, man. And as I mentioned, watching from afar your journey in self-improvement and personal development, which is largely the conversation we had before the season began. Where did that all start for you? Because obviously we'll get to the chat around the basketball side of things and the athlete side, but for you as an individual, like, when did you really decide that you wanted to go a little deeper and start to do some of that inner work and begin to work on yourself, I guess, spiritually and mentally, outside of just becoming a better athlete day in, day out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. I think for myself, and maybe this isn't everyone, but for myself, it took me getting to a really low point to want to fix something. I think for me, that was probably around when I finished college. College was kind of instrumental in me going this way and kind of not being happy with where I was at in life and the person that I was. And yeah, that's kind of when it started. I finished college and I had a pretty successful senior season, so I was happy and I was optimistic that I could get an NBL gig or at least a professional gig overseas. But when I got to the NBL and I saw that the level that, you know, some of these guys were at and some, you know, how they were operating, I got into the league and the first team I was on was Melbourne United the year after they'd won a championship. And that team had Chris Golding and Casper Ware and Dave Barlow and, you know, Olympians and guys who had kind of made it. Yeah, I saw the level that they were at, and, you know, that was the goal. That was where I wanted to be. But, you know, behind the scenes, I wasn't operating on that level. I wasn't doing the things day in and day out that were going to get me to, you know, hopefully one day their level improvement.
For sure. I'm a big believer in the fact that our environment and our level of what we've been exposed to, our level of thinking is what allows us to, I guess, progress or not progress in life. And we look at what our reality is, it's a direct byproduct or a reflection of what we're putting out, right? And so I think that's why our environment, the people we spend time with, what we are exposing ourselves to is so detrimental to what we get to experience in life. And so take us back to before going to college. Like, what was life like for you growing up? Where did you grow up? And what was that kind of process like getting to the collegiate level? And how did that environment, and I guess the environment you were in when you did feel like you went to your low point, how does that differ from the environment you're surrounding yourself in now?
Yeah, it's some good questions. So to start, I guess I grew up in Adelaide, spent most of my early life in Adelaide until I was 18 and went to college. And I played soccer. I played soccer up until I was 14. That was my love. That's kind of what I fell in love with, I guess you could say. And that's, I thought for a while that that's what I wanted to do professionally. I had a soccer coach who, you know, wasn't the nicest guy and maybe turned me off a little bit. And so I, you know, being decently tall and decently athletic, I decided to pick up basketball, and then I kind of fell in love with it from the age of 14 as well. I met a guy named Rashad Tucker in Adelaide, who is still running GTM out there, Game Time Moves, which is a, you know, it's a development program he runs out there for kids. And yeah, just kind of through him, fell in love with the game and learned some moves and some skills. And yeah, that's kind of how I developed on the basketball side of things. And I guess to take it back even further, I didn't grow up with a dad. My dad wasn't around. My biological dad wasn't around. And so looking back at it now, I think possibly there was maybe some type of identity crisis for me growing up, not knowing where I fit in and yeah, just missing that piece of myself, really. And him and I have got a great relationship now. We've been able to mend that, which has also been instrumental for my growth now. But back then, it was kind of like, who do I look up to, and who do I model myself around, I guess. And then, yeah, leaving Adelaide at 18 years old, I think, as any 18-year-old is, their mind is very sort of malleable. And so the people I was around when I got to college were the people I kind of modeled who I was going to be around, and those weren't the best influences. And I guess that's kind of where the spiral, I guess you could say, downwards came from, when I got around all these guys who weren't valuing the things that I knew deep down that I valued, but I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere else. So that is, I guess that's how the kind of downward stuff started for me.
With your old man not being around growing up, did you feel like that led to, and you know, the question I'm about to ask, like when I'm working with clients now from the mindset side of things, when we start diving into self-limiting beliefs and why we have some of these subconscious behaviors or thought patterns or just identities that we tie ourselves to, it's often, you know, from something either from childhood or an experience, a traumatic experience, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Without your old man being around, did you feel like that led to you trying to fill that void, or even like people pleasing type of behavior, or kind of like really seeking that validation or appreciation and love from someone or something else? Like, was that part of your kind of journey growing up or not?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, people pleasing was my middle name for a while. Like it's literally what I grew up doing, trying to, you know, earn that, like you say, that love from external sources. And my mom did a great job of raising me. I feel like, you know, she showed me so much love and did the best she could with what she had. And so with her, and then I had, you know, I had good friends as well growing up. But yeah, I think everyone kind of needs that older sort of role model male as a man. And yeah, I think subconsciously, like you say, the beliefs were there that I needed to please and I needed to do things to gain love, when I don't think that that's how children should be operating.
Anyone.
Yeah, anyone. That's true. Yeah. But yeah, so then at 18, I guess, I was looking for something. I was looking for something to connect with, to resonate with, to be a part of. And yeah, it just wasn't the right things at the right time, but I didn't know. And I didn't know any better.
Yeah, man, that's interesting. And so your college career, were you there for 4 years?
4 years, yeah. Two at a JUCO in Iowa and two at a Division I school in Louisiana.
Incredible. And so we'll obviously get to the growth that you've kind of had personally throughout this episode, but just kind of the person that you are now and your level of awareness and consciousness and all the rest of it, do you feel like, and you know, I'll say that obviously it's really important to never look at your past and wish it could have been any different. I think everything happens for a reason. And you know, even some content that you kind of engaged with the other day, like I'm a big believer in the only time we should be focused on is right now. And when we look at what our future holds, the past has fuck all to do with it unless we allow it to. And unfortunately, a lot of people do. But when you look back now, if you had the tools that you have in your toolkit now, are there certain things that you not only would have done differently, but like certain situations that would have been perceived a lot differently? Do you feel like some of those struggles or what led to that down point, that down period, do you feel like that would have played out a lot differently if you had the awareness you've got now?
Oh, without a doubt, because I think I wouldn't be so swayed by emotions and I wouldn't be so looking for external validation really at the end of the day. I would be able to find that in myself. And I think with the principles and values that I have now, that's kind of what drives everything. Whereas mm-hmm. in the past, it was acceptance from others. And like I keep saying, validation from others that was driving everything that I did. So I was easily swayed and my emotions were swaying me every single day as well. And so, yeah, if I had the tools back then and I knew better, I think, college would have been a different experience for me. But I agree with you. Like there's no, it's the wrong mindset to have that, oh, I wish this could have happened, or, you know, I wish something was different from my past. Cause I don't think even if I had a little bit of that back then, and I didn't experience the things I experienced in college internally, it wouldn't have driven me to try and get to the heights that I'm trying to get to now. And I'm just so happy that, you know, obviously there's a huge contrast in that. And the way that I've been feeling lately, you know, so happy and just so content with my life and content with myself, you know, you can't really have those times without kind of having the down times as well. That's what I believe in anyway.
Yeah, 100%. You know, the law of polarity, like to every negative, there has to be a positive. To every positive, there's a negative, and it's just about trying to find it, right? And so you get to Melbourne United. Talk us through how that felt. Like you finished college career, where was your kind of headspace at once you arrived back in Australia and I guess started, you know, filling the position that you had with United and over those next few years? Cause you, was it 3 years at United and then you shifted across to the Jack Jumpers for a couple. And then obviously now we're in present day in Brisbane, but how was, tell us a bit about yourself once you got back to the NBL in regards to where your personal growth was at then, and maybe some of the things that you still maybe hadn't identified yet or things that you were kind of struggling with mentally or from a personal level once you got back to the league, if any.
Yeah, so when I got back to Australia, I was very much operating from the same place I was in college. I hadn't yet grown to a point where I knew different or I wanted to be different, or I was even trying to learn about being different. So I would say, yeah, probably from all 3 years in Melbourne, I was not able to be myself. I was not able to show up as myself and just put myself out there and say, hey, this is me. Take it or leave it. I was tippy-toeing around guys who I thought were on this pedestal because I didn't want them to judge me, even though people judge you regardless. I talked about vulnerability the other day. That was something I had none of. Throughout college, you're taught that to be vulnerable is to be weak, and showing emotion as a man, showing, you know, struggle as a man is weak, and it's a food chain over there, and it's, well, probably everywhere, you know, and so I was still caught up in that when I got back and wasn't able to show up as myself at Melbourne United. When I started with Melbourne, those 3 years in Melbourne, I had a little bit of understanding around meditation. Meditation was probably the biggest thing that I was into at that point, probably the only thing that I was into at that point. I would give it a go here and there, try it maybe once a week and then not do it for a week or whatever. And I think at that point it would have been helpful to me if I could be consistent with it, but I just wasn't consistent enough with it for it to really make a change in my life. And so, you know, with that being the only thing that I was trying, I was very much on the same track that I was on in college, except I wasn't able to get away with it as much. Like this was now my full-time job. I was around real pros who were really putting in the work on and off the court and being professionals at the end of the day. And I was still operating as a kid, really, a kid who was in college and eating whatever he wanted and doing whatever he wanted off the court and still being able to show up and drop 20 points. Like that was easy for me in college. But then I got to Melbourne, and you could really tell the difference of, okay, I'm, you know, I can't expect to do that and have the results, but I didn't know how to change. So that's kind of how I was operating like that when I was at Melbourne.
For sure. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And like coming back to what we said before about the impact of environment, it's crazy how that change in environment was what led to obviously the realization that, all right, shit needs to probably change a little bit here, I guess, if you are wanting to reach those levels that you wanted to. And so where was your headspace at when you got back to United? Like finishing up at college, as you said, probably not surrounding yourself with the right people, which kind of leads you stray a little bit in regards to the original goal or path that you want to go on. Mm-hmm. When you go back to the NBL, in your mind, what was the path that you wanted in regards to how you define success being an NBL player? Like, what was the heights that you were trying to aim towards when you got back here and spent time at United initially?
Yeah, so I didn't even have necessarily goals, numbers wise or statistics wise or anything like that. I just wanted to be a good basketball player. I wanted to be successful as I could and make as much money as I could, doing something that I loved. Once again, it didn't align. What I wanted and my actions off the court, they weren't aligning. But I was hard-headed and I was stubborn, and like we talked about, the programming, the inner beliefs and stuff, you just keep, it's like a circle. You just keep coming back to the same results. This doing the same things off the court was leading me to the same results. And so, it's like, it took years and years, like 4 years at college and a couple of years after college, learning these bad habits and learning, the wrong ways to deal with emotion and the wrong ways to deal with my own insecurities and things like that. It took years and years of me doing that and building those bad habits. And so it ended up taking me years and years, and still is. And I'm still in those years of unlearning those things, and truly aligning with my goals and trying to become the person that I want to become. But I think in that Melbourne period, a little bit in that Tassie period, I was just trying to unlearn some things, and it was a long process.
Mm. It's a good point you make though. Like, I think for a lot of people, once we have these patterns or these beliefs, firstly, if you can't identify them, then they'll continue to run your life, and they do for a lot of people forever, right? But once you have identified them, I think it is really an important point to note that they can be changed. It's like any habit or belief, right? You don't wake up in the morning with a limiting belief just fucking overnight for no reason. They're habitual. Like it comes over time. It's the story you're telling yourself. It's the environment you're surrounding yourself in. It's the actions you continually take to the point where they become subconscious. And so it's very similar to, let's say, health and fitness, right? Someone has the poor eating and training habits for years, and then we want to make a change. And I think for a lot of people, they kind of pull the pin when it's been 5-6 weeks and they don't look the way they expect it to look yet. And it's like, we're trying to unlearn and reprogram these piss poor habits that we've had for so long that is not going to happen overnight. Yeah. And so being able to start that process or that journey with the understanding of like, okay, it's not a quick fix. And I think, I don't know about yourself, but one of the key things I've taken from personal development and even like just the laws of the universe and all that stuff as well, it's like, you really have to begin to just embody the version of yourself that is a match for that outcome that you want. And it's really hard to do initially because there's no evidence of it yet. It's like, we're trying to feel, think, speak, act this certain way of the person we're trying to become, but the reality doesn't look any different yet. And so that's when it's hard to stay in that, that sense of belief and trust that everything is happening for you. It's just going to take time. And, the analogy I use a lot is around like a dam wall. And so you've got like on one side of the dam wall, there's the water, but we're on the other side and you're making those daily or weekly deposits and the water's gradually rising. But from the outside in, it looks like fuck all's happening.
Yeah.
Until eventually, as you remain consistent and keep compounding, the water either breaks through or comes over the wall, and that's when you see all that growth. So when you shifted up to Brisbane, Or maybe it was before that, what was that turning point where you decided to kind of go all in? Because I mean, when we spoke earlier this last year, I think it was when we spoke, right? Before the season, you know, I got the sense that you had gone all in. And I don't know if that was like a fresh thing at that point or whether it had been some time already, but it felt like you had made that convicted decision to go all in with just doing whatever was necessary in order to grow personally, which I think, you know, as a byproduct, as we've kind of seen over this past season, led to massive growth as a player as well. So what was that point for you where you decided like, all right, I'm making this decision to go all in with just bettering myself?
Yeah, it was definitely around that point. It was after my last season in Tassie. And so I had a poor season. I was injured a lot. I was not playing as much as I wanted to. And yeah, another low point, you know, for me, which kind of spurred some real soul searching, I guess you could call it. But I basically just had a real conversation with myself and just said, look, you're 27, you know, you say you want to get to here in basketball, you say you want to get to here in life and in your relationships and in your personal development, but you keep ending up in the same spot. Like, you can't just keep doing the same thing. You can't just keep acting the same way you are acting and expecting different results. So yeah, I changed a lot of things. I eliminated things out of my life and people out of my life and really knuckled down and wrote down some goals and wrote down my values and habits and things that I was just like, I'm just going to give it a crack. Like, what's the worst that can happen by trying to do all these things the right way? If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But at least then later on in life, I can look back at my basketball career and say, I gave it a crack. I gave it all I had, and I got to where I got to. You know, that's something that I really wanted to be able to do. And I still want to be able to do now that I know all this stuff. I want to be able to look back on my career and say, I gave it absolutely everything I got, and I didn't leave anything on the table. So that was kind of the mindset I had at the time. And yeah, I think maybe when I spoke to you, I think it was a couple of months in or something. So I was feeling pretty good about life. And yeah, like what you were just saying, I agree. The growth part is, to me, it feels almost exponential. It's you know, it's not linear. It's okay. It feels the same. And then all of a sudden, you know, holy shit, I feel great. And that's kind of what it was like for me. And I just knew I had to stick to my habits. And you know, I've got a morning routine, and I've got a set of things that I just know I have to get done. And for some people, it might not be that intense. For some people, it might not be getting in the ice bath at 6 a.m. every morning. But for me, I'm like, I need to tick that off for myself so that I trust myself and so that I have all the confidence in the world that I can get done what I say I want to get done. And so that was kind of the mindset. I'm not perfect. I've had mess ups. I've had stuff ups since then, but I feel like I kind of know the blueprint for myself now. Mm-hmm. And that's a great feeling. Knowing that, you know, at least you've got some type of direction and you've seen some form of results.
Yeah. I think it's that awareness too. Like, you know, I say to all of my clients, I'm not saying that you guys or myself are ever going to be perfect. You're still going to have a shit day here and there. You're still going to fuck up here and there. You're still going to have things that don't go your way, and you're not going to be perfect, but it's the difference between someone who can continue to see, you know, continual growth and success and someone who can't is the ability to recognize it and be aware of it and make that shift or make that change to snap out of it as quick as possible and learn from those mistakes. And so, you know, you speaking now on that level of self-discipline, which it's interesting, right? Because I've seen this, it's a bit of a pattern, I feel like, within successful people, is that from the outside in, someone looks at your ability, let's say, to go to training every day or to go lift or to do whatever it is as an athlete, and they're like, fuck, that's discipline. But for me, I look at that and I go, I almost think that's not discipline, because it's like, this is something that I love that I'm fucking going to do regardless, right? And so, yeah. Yes, it takes a level of discipline, but after a while, it's not, just part of who you are. And that goes with any positive habit that's enjoyable. The real discipline is doing the things that aren't familiar, the things that are uncomfortable and there is resistance towards, which, as you said, whether it's an ice bath, I'm interested to hear what other little tools and things that are part of your day-to-day now. But it's that level of self-discipline for anyone like listening or watching right now as well. It's not necessarily going to the gym or doing your work and stuff like that, because in time that becomes just part of who you are. The discipline is when you're doing the things that you realistically don't really feel like doing them, but you know there's a positive benefit on the other side of it. And in time, the good news is that they become a habit as well. And so what once required a high level of discipline to get in that ice bath at 6 a.m, after a period of doing them, that level of discipline starts to diminish a little bit and becomes something that becomes enjoyable. So what are some of those tools that you're using on a daily basis, or what's some of the work that you're doing, I guess we could say?
Yeah, I mean, great points. I totally agree. For me, the morning routine that I have at the moment is get up and have my water, have a glass of water, and go downstairs and meditate. The first thing I do is meditate. I get to some light, because if I'm in the dark and I do it and I'm tired from the night before, I'm falling straight back asleep. So getting downstairs for me is awesome. Getting away from, you know, distractions and things like that. Meditating, writing a few things in my journal, some intentions for the day, how I want to show up for myself that day, really just kind of reinforcing it in my mind and reminding myself, you know, who I want to be and who I want to be, you know, on that day specifically. And then, yeah, it's straight into the ice bath, which is a bit of a mental challenge, man. Like it's obviously difficult physically, but the amount of times I've just found myself outside next to the ice bath, and I'll just literally be having a conversation with myself,
arguing with yourself.
Yeah, just like trying to talk myself out of it. But like you said, the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it. And while it does suck still for those 3 minutes, I'm at a place now where I just know that it's who I am. You know, that's what I do. I do what I say I'm going to do. And it's a great feeling to, you know, still have those conversations, but the side I really want to win is the one that wins. And so, yeah, that's been a big part of my kind of morning routine. Then it's usually getting up and making some healthy breakfast or a smoothie or something. I've got a 3-year-old son, so he's usually up at that point, make him some breakfast as well, and get him ready for the day, and then I'm off to the gym usually. But I just feel like for me, that's been so instrumental in setting my days up how I want them to be set up. I find if I don't handle those things in the morning, I'm more susceptible to, you know, cancel the whole day out and just scrap the whole day because, you know, I didn't handle what I was supposed to do. So that kind of sets me up for the day.
What impact do you feel like that's had on your basketball career over this last year or two, or like, you know, since you've kind of gone all in with that? Like, do you find or see a direct correlation with your ability to achieve on court, you know, based off how disciplined and how, I guess, structured, or how much growth you were seeing off the court?
Yeah, so I guess to get into some other layers, I think that my self-confidence on the court has been a big reason why I've had some more success, and you know, why I think I've grown a little bit on the court. And to me, the self-confidence part comes from, I guess, the self-image and how you see yourself. Mm. And so, like you were saying, those daily deposits for me, and getting out of that ice bath and feeling amazing and feeling like I've accomplished something and I did what I said I was going to do, it only reinforces who I say that I want to be. And by the way, who a lot of people already thought I was. You know, a lot of people already thought, yeah, I was so disciplined. I was this ultimate professional and these type of things. And they didn't know that I was just not doing a lot of the right things off the court. And so, you know, I bought into that for a while. I bought into the, oh yeah, I'm just disciplined, and this is the most disciplined I can be and the most professional I can be, because other people were telling me that and I was lying to myself. And so when I got to that awareness part, to where I could be like, no, actually you need to handle everything. Yeah, it just only built self-confidence. And I think that's kind of more or less why I was able to succeed more last season than in previous seasons.
You mentioned earlier in our chat around, I guess, shying away from vulnerability, and, you know, how it's, I guess, in some environments or groups or industries even, it's kind of frowned upon. And, you know, I tend to look at it as an absolute superpower. Like, to me, vulnerability, gratitude, but, you know, particularly vulnerability is one of our biggest superpowers, and also allows us to break through so many of those limiting beliefs or things that hold us back, and those sticking points that can just keep us as a prisoner for basically our whole life if they're not addressed. But what's required the most vulnerability from your part over these, over this journey so far, that you really feel has unlocked, you know, that new potential, or that, that the ability to truly be authentic to yourself and live in alignment?
Yeah, I think for me, it was being able to ask for help. And I think, like I said earlier, it's just kind of frowned upon. And I know, like I said, the environment that I was in, you know, you don't ask for help. You handle things. You're a man. You handle things, right? Like you take care of stuff, and you don't complain, and you don't show weakness, because that pushes you down that status. I don't know what you're supposed to call it, but it's about status. You know, you want to be on top, and that is perceived as weak if you are vulnerable in a lot of societies. And so, yeah, for me, that only led to, you know, loneliness and unhappiness and lack of connection with people. A lot of my relationships for, you know, that period of my life were very surface level. And, you know, with those type of relationships, there's not a lot of real interpersonal connection. And so that's, I feel like why I was feeling alone. And so it had reached a breaking point. I remember being away with the Australian team in Indonesia, and we were away for a couple of weeks and, you know, hotel room for 2 weeks away from my family. All this stuff had built up with inside me. And at that point, I hadn't learned so much about vulnerability. I hadn't learned so much about letting people in, not being afraid to show emotion, those type of things. And I just remember, like, I've never told anyone this, but I just remember being on the physio table, and I must have looked down that day or something. Must have looked sad or something. And the physio was just like, "Are you all right?" Like, you know, he kind of asked it again, and he was like, "Are you sure you're all right?" And I just lost it, man. I just started bawling my eyes out. I was just crying uncontrollably, and I didn't want to. And I was still under the impression that this made me look weak at that point. But, you know, it had reached that point where I just couldn't keep all my emotions in anymore. And I had so much built up stuff that I had internalized. I had just tried to deal with myself, and I didn't know how to be vulnerable. And so at that point, I had to kind of tell them, "Oh, look, I miss my family and my son. I got a baby at home," and all these things that were going on in my mind, which in previous times I wouldn't be able to get out. And I just, you know, shoved to the bottom or whatever. And that, I guess, was, you know, a moment for me where I was like, okay, I need to find some outlets. I need to find, you know, some people who I can trust and who I can be open and honest with, to be able to get stuff off my chest and hear them as well. And as time's gone on, I've learned that that's a real way to connect with people. And, you know, there are so many great relationships in my life now who, you know, I wouldn't have had that relationship with them if there wasn't vulnerability on both sides.
That's awesome, man. And I'm assuming it was extremely liberating feeling, even just, you know, as you said, probably didn't necessarily want to show that emotion at that point, but once it's out, you know, as they say, like being able to let out your emotion or talk to someone and get it off your chest, it's such a liberating and light feeling afterwards, which I'm assuming felt pretty good.
Oh yeah. Yeah. At the time when the tears are coming down, it's like, "Oh, what am I doing?" But then, you know, afterwards it's like, yeah, I needed that. You know, I needed that. There's been a few times since where, you know, it turns to that for me, and I just have to let everything out. And you know, I think it's important to be vulnerable with, you know, people you trust and people who you feel like you want to have that connection with. I'm not like, I don't think it's good to just go and tell your boss all your problems, or, you know, tell it, you know, be super vulnerable with everyone. I think there's obviously, you know, context with it. But, you know, having those few people or a group of people who you can really open up to and show emotion and create that connection with, I think is important. And it was for me.
That's incredible, man. I think that's such a good message for people to hear and see as well. You know, coming from someone in your position who, you know, a lot of people would look up to as a professional athlete, and it's becoming more common now, I think, which is really good. I think more and more people are in positions like yourself are starting to show that it is okay to be vulnerable or to, you know, speak about your problems or, and it doesn't, and I think the important thing to take away from a lot of this as well, you know, you mentioned before is that it took a low point for you to realize that you need to make these changes. And one thing I hope people can take away from this is that we shouldn't have to let it get to that low point to change, right? You hear about, you know, alcoholics who have to get to the point where it's that bad that they need to make a change. It's like being able to have that self-awareness and the vulnerability to be able to take preventative measures or to add in tools to your toolkit to the point where you don't have to allow yourself to get to a point where there's no other option. It's like, it's being proactive, I think, is such a beneficial thing. And you mentioned, you posted on your social media the other day, which I'll have linked in the show notes because outside of your basketball content, obviously you've started posting some really cool content on the journey that you're on, which is awesome. And you put up a post that I really resonated with in regards to like perfection or trying to feel like you always need to do something to perfection. I'd love for you to kind of speak on that a little bit because I found it really valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's everywhere, right? Like social media, everything's perfect. Everyone's posting their most perfect stuff. And, you know, even for myself personally, aside from social media, it was, you know, disguised as self-improvement, disguised as, well, I just want to get better. I just want to get better. But as I've done some, like I said, soul searching and become more aware and I've sat with myself and with my thoughts, it's become kind of apparent to me that I'm doing this out of fear. I'm not doing this out of, you know, the love for whatever I'm trying to be perfect in. I'm doing it out of fear because I don't want, you know, I don't want to look flawed. I don't want to look, it kind of ties into vulnerable a little bit, I guess. And it's in my opinion, not healthy. You know, obviously it's not the right way to try and improve. And I think for a long time, yeah, fear was driving me every day to get up and go to the gym. And, you know, all little things in my life were, you know, disguised. I said that I was a perfectionist, but really I was just scared. You know, I was just scared of other people's judgment if I wasn't able to show up how maybe they thought I should, or, you know, how I thought that I was perceived.
It must feel like such a privilege or, you must feel a big sense of gratitude for the lessons that you're learning and understanding now and now being able to share that value with other people, but particularly to have that stage of your life happening while your son is so young, to be able to relay, you know, this growth within yourself and be that role model or have that environment for your son to be in as well, to be able to take away that value without having to, you know, maybe wait 20, 30 years down the track to start their journey. So that must be a pretty cool and inspiring feeling for you as well, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's a soft spot for me, obviously, all parents will know. But yeah, I've had a bunch of people, you know, who are older than me saying, man, like you're 28, you know, it's great that you're doing things now. And I'm like, man, I wish I was 18 still. I wish, you know, I was younger. Like, it's just awesome that he's 3 years old and I'm going to be here for him and I'm going to be able to teach him healthy ways of dealing with things and healthy ways of dealing with emotions, connecting with people, being okay with who he is, knowing that he's enough. All these things are very important. And I think that, you know, you don't necessarily get taught these things in school and maybe you should, I don't know. But, you know, for me, I didn't know until I kind of had to learn it myself. And so I'm just excited and happy that I'm hopefully be able to instill these things in him.
Incredible, man. I have absolutely no doubt that you would be able to do that. And again, just him having that environment to be in, has such an impact, which is incredible. So what is the future kind of hold for you? Like, where obviously how much longer have you got left on your contract with Brisbane at the moment?
Yeah, so I've got next season on the contract. And it's a crazy business. So I love it here in Brisbane. I absolutely love it here in Brisbane. I love the coaches, I love my teammates. So I'd love to be back, but you just never know. So I can't really speak to too much far ahead, but yeah, I'm loving my time here in Brisbane. So the goal is to keep working with these fellas and get a championship, keep improving, keep being uncomfortable off the court. I think that's part of it for me. I've had so many fears, you know, growing up and being a young adult and tackling those now. And it is uncomfortable, but I've seen the growth now. And so it's exciting as well.
Before we wrap things up, like, I mean, you know, we've touched on the vulnerability, touched on, you know, the importance of getting uncomfortable. And I think accountability is a big one too, right? What's something, I'm going to put you on the spot, but like, what's something for you right now that does scare the fuck out of you that, you know, you have the intention of trying to face or change or to grow in? Like, what's an area for you right now that you do feel kind of vulnerable about or scared about, that you can kind of put it out there as an intention now to really double down on over this next 12 months, however long it kind of takes to move through it?
Public speaking. It is just never been something that I've been good at. Although I haven't had many opportunities to do it, it's something that, yeah, it scares me. And that's kind of what tells me that I need to do it more. And I want to do it more. I've thought about maybe picking up a public speaking course or something here or there, but I just know that the feelings that I get before I have to make a speech or before I have to speak in public, I don't like that feeling. I don't like feeling that uncomfortable. And so it's something that I want to grow and learn more about and put myself in those uncomfortable situations so that I can grow, so that I can get better at. There's a lot of different things which I'm still learning, I'm still growing. That's why I love, you know, yourself on social media and your podcast and, you know, a bunch of other people who I follow now as well, because I think it's really important. And I like how there's lifestyle in your podcast. It's not just a, like you said earlier, it's not just a 6-week program to fix your life. You know, this is something that if you really want to see the results, you have to invest and you have to become that person. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to become the best version of myself, for myself and for my family.
Incredible, man. Well, you're doing an exceptional job at it. And yeah, like I said at the beginning of the episode, I've enjoyed watching that growth from afar and from the personal level, but also from the athlete perspective as well. It's been so sick to, as I said, you know, seeing you back in the day at AMSAC, like when you're with United, and even just to see the progression that you've made up until this point is sweet. And I'm keen to keep following that journey, man. And I'm sure plenty of others are after this episode today as well. So firstly, appreciate your time. Very grateful for you coming on the show, man. And looking forward to staying in touch and hopefully, you know, continuing to see you put out more and more content around your growth and journey as well. Cause I think, as I said before, when someone can look at someone in a position that you're in doing that type of work and that type of content and vulnerability, it only does obviously incredible things for, you know, the younger generation, I guess you could say, but just for anyone too. Like, you know, I would imagine you'd be having people that are far older than you seeing you put yourself out there and do these things that are, you know, hopefully lighting that spark inside of them as well. So I appreciate your time, man. And I'm looking forward to hearing the feedback from this episode. And you know, for anyone who is watching or listening at the moment, we'd love for you to share this episode with someone that you care about. We'd love to hear your feedback. As I said, I'll have the links to all of Sam's socials and whatnot in the show notes below. And yeah, man, appreciate your time. I'm looking forward to staying in touch. And thanks for sharing your story.
Appreciate you, brother. And thank you for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, man.
Thanks, bro.